I'm Neo. Welcome into the Skeptic Arena. Today is August 17th, 2013. The website is theskepticarena.com. Today's article is entitled Submission in Marriage, written by Mrs. Stephen Anderson of the Faithful Word Baptist Church in Phoenix, Arizona. She begins, "Disclaimer, I do not at all think or claim that I am a perfect wife or fully submitted to my husband, and that all the time." Mrs. Stephen Anderson, after readers finish this essay, I think they will all agree that you could have ended that sentence after you said, "I do not at all think." That's because you have allowed your husband to assume the responsibility to do all of your thinking for you, as will soon become evident to everyone. And what's with the Mrs. Stephen Anderson? Are you so subservient that he won't even allow you to use your own name? Mrs. Stephen Anderson continues, "It is possible to understand and believe in a concept without oneself having perfected it. I am sharing my insights here, not giving a rundown of my wifely accomplishments." Mrs. Stephen Anderson, you are as dominated by your husband as any Muslim woman living under Sharia law. The only difference I can see is that he doesn't require you to wear a head sack. Yet. She wrote, "On the most recent Q&A, the question was raised, how exactly, from a practical standpoint, a wife submitting to her husband would play out in everyday life. Well, Mrs. Stephen Anderson, it goes without saying that sex on demand is certainly one of the privileges of patriarchy, isn't it? I mean, how could you call yourself a submissive wife if you refused his demand for a blowjob anytime, any place?" Now Mrs. Stephen Anderson quotes a reader who wrote, "What I'm wondering is that your husband talks a lot about how he is the boss in his own home and how you, as his wife, have to submit to him. I do get that in theory, but how exactly does this work in your everyday life? I'm also asking this because you seem to be pretty independent when it comes to managing your household, like putting the family on an organic-only diet and so on. So a few questions to get a better idea. Who decides on homeschooling things, like which book to use, you or your husband? What if you, during the day, forbid or allow a child to do something and your husband doesn't agree with your decision? I mean, sure, with the big things you could call him, but with the thousands of small decisions every housewife and mother has to do every day. How does it work with the finances? Do you get an amount of money and then decide yourself how to use it?" Mrs. Stephen Anderson, that was a good question. Does he give you an allowance? The reader continues with her comment. "And with general big decisions like choosing where to live, which house to buy, your children's names and so on, do you get to say anything or does your husband decide everything without considering your opinion? Like, would he give a child a name he knows you don't like? I'm sorry for asking so many questions, but while it is common to hear that the husband is the head of the home, it's sometimes tricky in everyday life." Mrs. Stephen Anderson now replies, "A clear chain of authority is nothing unique to marriage. Just about any aspect of our society is built on them. Children are supposed to obey their parents. Employees are supposed to be working for the boss according to his wishes, not their own agenda. Courts have higher courts over them. None of these examples seem to throw anyone for a loop, as much as saying in the 21st century that wives are supposed to obey and reverence their husbands, and submit unto them as unto the Lord. Mrs. Stephen Anderson, you got that one right. Most people understand the chain of authority in the examples you gave. But as you yourself admit, biblical subjugation to a husband does throw 21st century humans for a loop, because they realize that it is nothing more than ancient crap written by men to ensure dominance over women. But you are proof that many people still live in the Dark Ages and show no signs of leaving it anytime soon. I also thought it was interesting that the woman who wrote the question admitted to hearing your husband brag often about his dominance over you. That must make you so proud. Now Mrs. Stephen Anderson continues. The husband being the head of the home does not mean that he makes every decision. The Bible makes it clear that while the husband's duty is to provide for the family and to protect it, mostly dealing with the world outside the family, the wife's duties are mostly within the family, for example, raising the children and keeping the home. My husband knows and appreciates my competence in this area, and trusts me to make the best decisions to keep us moving forward in the course we have set for our family based upon the Bible and his preferences. So yes, in my home, I am the queen, and as such, very independent. There is no need for my husband to monitor, veto, or override my every decision. I do not call him throughout the day to run this or that by him. If we come to a conflict, an area where we do not see eye to eye on, my opinion is carefully taken into consideration, as any wise and loving husband would do. Ultimately, however, the burden and responsibility of decision-making for these big areas is with the husband. These would typically be important decisions. Some examples are where to live, how many children to have, how to educate them, where to go to church, etc. Mrs. Stephen Anderson, right now, lots of women are shuddering at the thought that the important decisions that you mentioned will be dictated by the husband. In a marriage based on equality, something you could never comprehend, those decisions would be decided by both working together. If they cannot come to an agreement, then one will be forced to yield. But there's no reason why the woman should always be the one who has to yield, simply because an ancient collection of misogynistic fairy tales written by immoral men has dictated that men have dominion over women. She wrote, "Have I always agreed with my husband and his decisions? No, of course not. But thankfully, I have a higher power above him that I can appeal unto, one that is always wise, just, and perfect. God." Mrs. Stephen Anderson, now you're fading into la-la land. No matter what you tell yourself, your imaginary friend has no input into matters in the real world. That would be the world that your body lives in while your mind is off floating around fairyland. She wrote, "If my husband and I have two differing opinions on what we should do, both of us can't be right. Either he is right and I am wrong, or he is wrong and I am right." Mrs. Stephen Anderson, that was a classic false dichotomy and very easily proven wrong. One example where both of you are wrong is in the belief that your imaginary friends are real. She wrote, "Knowing this simple fact, I can pray to God that he would either show my husband the error of his thinking, or else, if my husband is indeed right, change my heart so that I can easily get on board and submit." You see, Mrs. Stephen Anderson, that just isn't going to work. Why? Because no one has ever actually heard your invisible ghost answering anyone. She continues, "True, if God were not a factor working in our lives, marriage would be quite scary and difficult. Actually, Mrs. Steven Anderson, two-thirds of the planet does not believe in your God. And guess what? Not all of them find marriage scary and difficult. In fact, I would proffer that both of you believing in an invisible evil monster is exactly what makes your marriage scary and difficult." She said, "But the same God that creates life, saves us from hell, and guides us into all truth." Mrs. Steven Anderson, how come your God guided over 1 billion Muslims into a different truth? And why did he fail to save billions of others from hell? She continues, "Can make either one of us have a change of heart effortlessly. I can think of a number of vital areas right now in which we had vastly differing opinions, but over time, with prayer, my husband came to see and agree with my standpoint. Lastly, God appoints authority, in this case that of the husband, not as a tool for the one in charge to serve themselves, but rather for that leader to use his power to serve those under his care and protection. My husband is commanded to love me as Christ loved the church, which means he should be willing to lay down his life for mine." Mrs. Steven Anderson, rational people don't need to be threatened by invisible monsters to make them feel that way about their spouses. It is an innate ability found not only in many humans, but in many other species as well. She said, "He has the say in decision-making, but it is all tempered by having to consider what decision will best serve me and our family. Where the Spirit of the Lord is, there is liberty." Mrs. Steven Anderson, all religions, and especially Christianity, do everything in their power to restrict liberty. They dictate what you can eat, what you must wear, when you can work, who you must hate and kill, and even what you believe and what you can think. Liberty is the last word that could ever be associated with your Lord. She wrote, "And within marriage and life in general, I enjoy great liberty." Mrs. Steven Anderson, that's true, as long as Steven allows it. You know, after reading your essay, I came away with the realization that when your husband married you, he basically got himself a dog he could have sex with. And no, that had nothing to do with your looks. Now let's move to the comment section, where things really got interesting. Anonymous wrote, "You are an extremely strong-willed woman. I can picture you putting your husband in his place any given moment of the day. I know that you are glad that he takes over once he gets home, but you are definitely not someone to be ordered around." Now the reply from Pastor Steven Anderson. Uh-oh, the bastard was monitoring her blog. What an insufferable prick, not to mention an absolute control freak. Steven Anderson writes, "Dear Anonymous, you may be able to picture my wife putting me in my place any given moment of the day, but that scenario only exists in your imagination." Holy shit, the preacher is pissed. All hands on deck. He continues, "As my wife explained in this post, and as I have often explained in my preaching, I give her a lot of freedom and don't feel the need to micromanage her." Mr. Steven Anderson, you give her a lot of freedom? My, isn't she one lucky girl? He continues, "She is a very skillful homemaker. She is very frugal and wise. so I don't waste my time second-guessing her domestic decisions. You say that my wife is definitely not someone to be ordered around, but I assure you, there are many times that I do order her around, and she is very submissive and obedient. Mr. Stephen Anderson, I read your statement to my wife. Guess what she asked me? She asked if that were written by a Muslim. Here's a suggestion, Pastor. Why don't you just buy your wife a burlap sack to wear and a prayer mat to kneel on? Then the only things missing from your house will be a Quran and a whip. Oh, sorry. I meant only one thing will be missing. You obviously already have the whip. He wrote, although my wife is very humble in her disclaimer at the beginning of this post, Mr. Stephen Anderson, admitting to not being perfect is hardly a description of being humble. He writes, the reality is that she definitely practices what she preaches in this area. In my opinion, she is the most amazing wife in the world. Mr. Stephen Anderson, of course, to you, she is the most amazing wife in the world. You just admitted that she lets you order her around, and she's very submissive and obedient. What more could you ask for? How many other women outside Saudi Arabia would accept your master-slave marital relationship? Not to mention, she pops out little Stephen Anderson's every 2 years like clockwork. As young as the two of you appear to be, I'm guessing that by the time she's done, her womb will probably have been home to a couple dozen squirming little torsos before she mercifully goes barren. What happens then, Stephen Anderson? Evangelical nutbags like you believe that sex is for procreation only. But we all know you'll have a nifty little excuse ready for when that time comes, don't we? Of course you will. He wrote, because not only is she very competent, intelligent, skillful, opinionated, and energetic, but she is also extremely feminine, submissive, old-fashioned, and obedient. Mr. Stephen Anderson, you've made it abundantly clear which of those two groups of qualities attract you the most. He wrote, the best of both worlds. Mr. Stephen Anderson, for you, yes. For her, maybe not so much. The best of both worlds for both partners would describe a marriage based on equality, not this Taliban-style arrangement you have set up for yourself. He writes, then on top of it all, she is stunningly beautiful. Mr. Stephen Anderson, if she were, she wouldn't be married to you. If she had any other options, even Benny down at the taco stand, she would be out of there so fast you wouldn't have time to load your shotgun. And he concludes by saying, but what is even more attractive about her than her looks is her wifely submission. Allahu Akbar. Well said, Mr. Stephen Anderson. I really owe you a debt of thanks for posting that comment. If anyone listening to or reading this show thought that I was being biased in my responses toward your wife's essay, your comment proved beyond any doubt that if anything, I went easy on her. Mr. Stephen Anderson, let's analyze what you just did. Your wife can't even write an essay without you reading over it and then barging in and straightening out any commenters who challenge your authority over your wife. It's easy to see why the comment was posted anonymously. They are all as terrified of you as your wife is. You went berserk when the anonymous commenter said that she could picture your wife putting you in your place. I'll bet when you read that, your kids had to run for the heart paddles and shock you back to life. And I'll also bet they thought twice before doing it. Think about this one, Pastor. Maybe your wife planted that comment anonymously to see how you would react. Didn't think about that one, did you? That's because when you read it, your blood pressure skyrocketed to over 300, and your only thought was to destroy this anonymous commenter before your wife got to thinking about any of those weird ideas like equality. And your reaction to your wife not being someone to be ordered around was classic Freud. You exploded like a gigantic shit ball into thousands of little fecal pellets and straightened that woman out. Good for you, my little Taliban man. For Mrs. Steven Anderson, this essay painted a detailed picture of the horror that is her life. Let's reread the comment from Anonymous. Only this time, let's read it under the assumption that it was really written by a desperate, trapped woman crying out for help. Quote, "You are an extremely strong-willed woman. I can picture you putting your husband in his place any given moment of the day. I know that you are glad that he takes over once he gets home, but you are definitely not someone to be ordered around." Unquote. If that were written by your wife, she is screaming for help. But with a husband like you, she's more likely to end up like those Muslim women who displease their husbands and get a face full of acid. You're a monster, Steven Anderson, just like the God you worship. And now we move to the science segment. Today's topic, non-wetting fabric drains sweat. Waterproof fabrics that whisk away sweat could be the latest application of microfluidic technology. The new fabric works like human skin, forming excess sweat into droplets that drain away by themselves. Researchers developed a new textile microfluidic platform using water-attracting threads stitched into a highly water-repellent fabric. They were able to create patterns of threads that suck droplets of water from one side of the fabric, propel them along the threads, and expel them from the other side. It's not just that the threads conduct water through capillary action. The water-repellent properties of the surrounding fabric also help drive water down the channels. Unlike conventional fabrics, the water-pumping effect keeps working even when the water-conducting fibers are completely saturated because of the sustaining pressure gradient generated by the surface tension of the droplets. The rest of the fabric stays completely dry and breathable. By adjusting the pattern of water-conducting fibers and how they are stitched on each side of the fabric, researchers can control where sweat is collected and where it drains away on the outside. This will be of great interest to workout enthusiasts, athletes, and clothing manufacturers who are all interested in fabrics that remove sweat and let the skin breathe. And now for the final segment of the show, famous quotes. Today, Arnold Henry Glasow, born 1905, died 1998 at the age of 93. Glasow was an American humorist. He graduated from Ripon College and started his own business when he moved to Freeport, Illinois, just after the Depression. His business was a humor magazine that he marketed to firms nationally. He carried on this business for over 60 years, publishing his first book at age 92. The book is titled Glasow's Gloombusters. He was cited frequently in the Wall Street Journal, Forbes, and the Chicago Tribune, among others. He was a regular contributor to the humor sections of Reader's Digest. Self-effacing and generous of spirit, he shunned the national spotlight. And here is the quote from Arnold Glasow. "The trouble with ignorance is that it picks up confidence as it goes along."
Are you ready, Goose? Start walking.